one sports talk show for your drive home.
I mean, you know how it is, rocking and rolling and whatnot.
This is Dukes and Bell
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We're live at Twin Peaks in Buckhead today. Happy Friday, man. I wish the weather would stay like this. It's supposed to rain tomorrow.
What?
Yeah, unfortunately. But you know what? I'm not a weatherman. I play one on the radio, so what do I know? I mean, hell, it could be 5%, 10%. Who knows?
Well, 90. It is sunny skies in Buckhead. More importantly, it is 28 point. Check that. 26. It's moving. It's like a moving target. 28 degrees is how cold the beer is right now. Our Dukes and Bell Hey Man Ale is on tap from Oconee Brewing. So come on down. Get yourself a big old 20-ounce mug of the good stuff, why don't you?
Yeah, man. Guys responding to the comments of Julio Jones about Antonio Brown before we get to Seth Emerson. And he's going to join us here from The Athletic to talk about the Dogs. We'll go on the sidelines in just a minute. But a guy hit me up, and he was like, Dukes, bring Antonio Brown to town. Whoa. Julio just told you guys. We're good. And another guy's like, yeah, we go undefeated. And he's being facetious.
Well, guys, first off, I don't know. I'm not trying to talk down to you. Okay, I'll talk down to you.
Okay, go ahead.
You can't afford right now to even fix the offensive line because you got to give Julio a bump and sign Grady Jarrett. How in hell are you going to take on Antonio Brown's contract?
You can't.
Okay, this isn't a Madden game. The only way you'd get Antonio Brown is you'd have to trade Julio to the Steelers. And that's what they're going to look for. So forget it. There was a time in my life when I would have taken Antonio Brown over Julio, knowing what a complete child he is and a diva. No, thank you. I know and I wish, and maybe with Cutter, we'll get Julio in the end zone more.
Yeah.
Because the last time Julio had double-digit touchdowns, you know who the OC was?
Dirk Cutter. Yeah.
So let's hope that that is a part of Cutter being here. I don't want to see Julio go 7 games next year without getting in the end zone, but I don't want Antonio Brown in that sideshow.
So, appreciate the feedback. Another guy was like, he doesn't fit the brotherhood. Screw that. You just can't afford it. Yeah. I mean, bottom line is, it doesn't make sense.
If he had Julio's work ethic, I would trade him straight up. But he doesn't, so we're not.
No, it's not going to happen. Anywho, what is happening today is we're getting ready for these NFL playoffs. We're going to talk more about these matchups coming up. Mike and I have been chopping it up all afternoon when it comes to these games. And, you know, there are a couple of things we agree on. Chargers are hot. Colts are hot. And we're going to get back into this discussion a little bit later on. And another hot topic, Mike, was, you know, as we were talking about these hires in the NFL and a lot of people going in saying it just seems like these owners are boxing, black minority candidates out of these head coaching jobs. You said it. There were, what, 4 or 5 black coaches that lost their jobs?
5 black coaches got fired. Now, again, if you want to take it on a case-by-case basis, you could argue that Marvin Lewis should have been gone 10 years ago.
Right.
But Marvin finally got. You had a 1-year coach in Wilkes over in Arizona. He got fired. And we saw that team up close and personal. Total disaster.
And by the way, you know, I'm always a proponent. We talk about this in college football. Well, he's going to need 3 years. Sometimes, okay, a guy gets a job, and you realize immediately this is not the dude.
Now, if guys, as you said, we don't know. We're not privy to what's going on behind the scenes. If ever there was a coach who did everything in his power to get fired in year one, Matt Patricia with the Detroit Lions.
Yes.
For whatever reason, they're going to roll with it. But I do think in college and in pro, you're right, in college, you used to be able to get your recruiting cycle through. Now, forget it. And in the pros, 2 years, 1 year. Coach. You can, with the right draft and the right free agent moves, go from worst to first. We've seen it happen in our division a dozen times.
Yeah.
So owners are not going to have that patience. But it is interesting in the case of the Cardinals, now you're starting all over again. You just drafted Josh Rosen. Everybody's talking about whatever. The Cliff Kingsbury thing of all these hires, that's the one to me that is the most suspect. At least Matt LaFleur has been in the NFL for 8 or 9 years.
Yeah, I don't disagree, man. We'll see and more about that conversation as well. Right now, though, let's shift gears and go on the sidelines with the Dogs.
Dukes and Bell on the sidelines with the Dogs.
As always, Carl, it's brought to you by Brightbox. BrightboxElectrical.com, 770-901-2500. Want to have a sports bar like we have here at Twin Peaks in Buckhead? Call the guys at Brightbox. You can put one in your basement.
All right, Seth Emerson on the line with us to talk about the Dogs. And it seems like we just caught up with Seth, you know, after the Sugar Bowl. But we want to call the guys that are in the know. And Seth is one of those guys. And we certainly appreciate you jumping back on Dukes and Bell, Seth. Let's start before we get to where we are currently. Let's go back to yesterday or even maybe 48 hours ago when the rumors were out there about Eddie Grand coming from Kentucky. Was he offered the job, and were those reports accurate?
Well, this season, by that I mean the coaching season, you're going to hear two different versions when something like that happens. You're going to hear from the school that he is staying at that, oh, yeah, he was offered and he's staying because he loves it there. And you're going to hear from the one that was talking to him that, this is, talk to him, no official offer made. There's a way for that to happen and for both sides to be right, which is no official offer gets extended unless you know the other person is prepared to accept it. We all know that. We've all been in that business where, even in our business, it's handled that way.
Right.
But I also did not hear from anybody on my end before it came out that he wasn't coming here, that he had been offered the job, for what it's worth. And for what it's worth, since Tuesday night, I guess that's when it was, when the Jim Chaney news hit. Right off the bat, I heard James Coley. And you can check my Twitter feed. I sent out two tweets saying, news, Jim Chaney's leaving for Tennessee. And then right on top of it, I said, James Coley is expected to be a candidate. I might have even said prime candidate. I heard that in rapid succession when I got confirmation that Chaney was leaving. I do think all along James Coley was probably the guy, and that Kirby Smart probably didn't want to make a decision too fast on it, because all of a sudden you've got $2.5 million basically to play with Mel Tucker and Jim Chaney's salaries coming off the books. So you talk to someone like Dan Enos, who's done a good job, but he's only at Kentucky, quote unquote. You kick the tire, Dan Enos, I'm jumping ahead.
Right.
But you talk to anybody you can talk to, and say, could there be a fit here? Could we have a co-coordinator situation? How would that work? And et cetera, et cetera. But I think today around noon, I think that's about when it was announced, you have the Dan Enos thing come out. You have on the heels of the Eddie Grand thing yesterday. I suspect that Kirby Smart said, you know what? We know what we're doing. Let's just get it done and announce it to the world.
It's our man Seth Emerson from Athletic Guys. Follow Seth. Go pick up the script. It's worth it, brother. And follow your dogs throughout the year. He joins us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Seth, the one concern for dog fans, obviously, was Sam Pittman, came in with Chaney. And he's good, right? And now he'll get a bump, as you said?
Yeah. We have those open records requests in, and I expect that he's getting a bump. Interesting that you would expect Alabama and Nick Saban would pull up the Brinks truck to get Pittman, I'm not seeing him mentioned right now. Bruce Feldman hasn't mentioned him. I haven't seen him on some other list. That would indicate that unless something changes, that something has already happened to ensure that Sam Pittman is not going anywhere.
And by the way, the Chaney raise, was that under the radar? I mean, that's kind of strange how we found out that he got a bump and it was extended beyond where his current contract was.
Well, I don't know about the bump yet. He got an extension at some point. His Claude Felton, the UGA spokesman, kind of told me earlier in the week, I think Monday, when we were checking around when the rumors had started, and I kind of looked at his contract again, and I said, well, actually, if I look at this, I'm looking at his original contract, it's expired. It expired once the Sugar Bowl ended, and we never got any word of an updated deal, of an updated contract. And he told me, Claude did, well, his contract runs through June 2021. I'm like, well, when did that happen? So we're still waiting on that. Still waiting to find out what the deal was there. I suspect something happened and just got kind of lost in the mail.
It is Seth Emerson talking about the dogs, guys, and getting us caught up on the latest with the coaching situation. Is some of these moves, again, some of this is the shell game and these coaches moving coaches around. And I think Kirby had an idea of what he wanted to do, but you have to wonder, again, what were they thinking about going out of the house to hire somebody? With the information you're telling us, Seth, and with the bumps and everything that we're talking about, I want to go back to Chaney real quick. When the dogs don't match this, and I had a guy ask me this the other day, he said, was this just simply the dogs not wanting to? Because they could have. It's not like they don't have the money. And then that lends me to another question, which is, okay, was it just they wanted Chaney to be gone?
Well, a couple things. Number one, if they wanted him to be gone, that would have been done a long time ago. You could say you wait for someone to take him off your hands if you want him to leave, but that's not the way it works. I think what happened here was when Tennessee came to him and when word came to Kirby Smart that, you know, Jim Chaney has this lucrative offer for $1.5 million, they said, well, we would, the plan was to keep Jim at $950,000 a year or around $1 million or whatever his salary was. But at 1.5, when that happens, and I wrote this on The Athletic when this broke, or I think it may have Wednesday, last year the division in salaries on the coaching staff between the offense and the defense was almost exactly even, with special teams coach Scott Fountain off on the side, not counting him in either column. Well, when Mel Tucker's 1.5 comes off the books, if you increase Jim Chaney to 1.5, and then Sam Pittman is getting an increase, Del McGee may be getting one, it's starting to really tilt in one direction. And that kind of thing matters. You know, Georgia has the money, but at some point you don't want to go too crazy. So right. I think they just said, you know, and the other thing is Jim Chaney wasn't a, you know, he wasn't an outstanding recruiter. He was, I mean, we can debate his play calling skills. I think he was pretty good with some deficiencies. But recruiting, you know, he wasn't a liability, but he wasn't an all-star either. And so I think they just ultimately made the decision, well, you know, we're going to say thanks, Jim, and we've got a pretty good coordinator right here, we think, in James Coley, and go that way.
Right, and that's the thing, Seth, is Seth Emerson joins us, guys, from The Athletic here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Dukes and Bell, we're live at Twin Peaks in Buckhead. Was the Chaney thing because of the Sam Pittman? And obviously Sam Pittman is worth his weight in gold as far as the quality of the offensive line, the recruitment, the play. Yeah. They got great depth. But to me, Chaney's like a glorified journeyman.
Yeah, I think, and there's people now saying, I hear from people, oh, he's going to retire in Athens. He loves it here. Well, okay. Well, if you want to believe that, okay. And maybe he does. But I think there's a chance Kirby Smart retires in Athens. He's 43 years old, so we're looking way down the line. I think in today's day and age, assistants move on. You know, I remember talking to Brett Bielema for a story on Pittman last summer, and he said he thought that the next move was probably the NFL for Pittman. He's that highly regarded. Now, part of what makes him so highly regarded is that he's a good recruiter, and you don't recruit in the NFL, so maybe that helps him stay here. But, you know, this is going to be fascinating to watch. I mean, I think Sam Pittman is going to be back at Georgia in 2019 unless something unexpected happens. But without Jim Chaney there, you know, how does he feel? How does he get along with everybody else? That's something to watch. When you look at the way Georgia fans feel about the staff they have, you know, they don't want to lose Kirby, obviously, but Pittman's the one after that they're like, build a force field around him. Keep him around.
Interesting. Seth Emerson joining us here on Dukes and Bell. We're live at Twin Peaks, guys. Happy Friday. Trying to get the latest insight into the Dogs and what's been going on with the program in college football. As we move towards, you know, this final signing date in February, we asked this question the other day, and you know, we had another guy on the other day who was saying, listen, the Dogs are going to be one or two in this recruiting class. It's right. Going to be Alabama or Georgia. How do you see that, and what do you think the missing piece is for the Dogs to be number one overall?
Well, I haven't broken down the numbers, so you're probably asking the wrong guy there.
Okay.
But I will say this. I mean, they're in that range, and that, again, speaks to how well they've recruited, and just that's great. That's where you want to be. What I will say is it now comes down to, we have to evaluate, you know, number one, holding on to this talent and developing it. I would be interested to see, and I'm just spitballing here because I think things have probably happened to Alabama and the teams that were behind Georgia in the rankings, but what if you re-ranked Georgia's 2018 recruiting class without Justin Fields and without Luke Ford? You know, you could do this for a lot of things. Like I said, look at the teams behind you, and you know they've probably had some attrition that doesn't occur to me because I don't cover them. And you would look at that class and say, well, one of the most productive members of it so far was the lowest rated one, Jordan Davis. You know, the only 3-star really that. Well, he wasn't literally the lowest rated. He wasn't literally the only 3-star, but he was a 3-star And so he's outperformed expectations. Does that make up for it? But, yeah, I mean, there's some guys that Georgia can still go for, but I think they've pretty much got the core of the class right now and some really good players. I think this class has the potential to contribute more immediately than relatively the 2018 did right away, because this class has guys that need positions. I mentioned Jordan Davis, but they still need bodies and good bodies on the defensive line. They've got that with a few guys like Trayvon Walker, the five-star. They need edge rushers with DeAndre Walker graduating and some other guys they're still waiting to develop. They've got that in the JUCO transfer, Jermaine Johnson, Nolan Smith, the five-star high school recruit. So N'Kobe Dean could come in and contribute right away at inside linebacker, which is a new area. So it's going to be interesting to see how quickly this 2019 class contributes. I think it could be very soon.
Always appreciate the insight, guys. Seth Emerson, if you missed it earlier, seemed like that Eddie Grant thing was a lot of hot air. Hey, man, we always appreciate the insight, Seth. Have a good weekend, man. We'll be pulling your brain soon again. Thanks again.
Anytime, guys.
Seth Emerson, guys, check him out, The Athletic. Hey, coming up, your chance to win $1,000 playing our National Signing Bonus Contest. I get the sense, Mike, for hearing from Seth and the sources he has there at Georgia, it was Coley all along, right? Don't you get that sense?
Now here's the question. Was it Bozzini or was it the Taglia? Was it Coley or was it Grant? No, in the case of Grant. Now, and by the way, yesterday, if you're listening to the show when it was going down, we just give you everything that was being published and was being reported.
Yeah.
And in some cases, it wasn't, as we said, it wasn't like, the bluegrassstate.com. It was actually like CBS Sports and all that had that Grant was being offered the job. But, hey, now we know he wasn't.
Coming up, man, Brian Baldinger. We visited with Baldy. NFL playoffs. What do you think about some of the coaching changes and these games this weekend? You'll hear it next. But first, let's give you a chance to win some money.
Now it's time to reveal our national signing bonus code word. The code word is...
Well, Samuel L. Jackson would say, you mother, M-O-T-H-E-R. Mother is the code word.
Mother. So my man's on it over here. Text that, man. 72881. You text your mother to 72881 for your chance to win some loot. It's $1,000, guys. We got three more chances this afternoon, but right now for the 4 o'clock hour, mother gets texted to 72881 and answer the phone if somebody calls. I don't know if it's a bill collector. They don't call on Fridays, do they?
I don't think so.
Could be our parent company with a grant for you.
Brian Baldinger on the way. Just when you think you've heard it all, stay tuned. Coming up in less than 10 minutes, we got some news for you in regards to offensive coordinators in the National Football League. And it actually applies to our Falcons. Stay tuned.
It really is crazy. Hey, guys, we are live at Twin Peaks in Buckhead. We got about half a keg of Hey Man Ale. So come on down and grab it. We'll get you some right down. So we're here off of Piedmont in Buckhead. Thanks, by the way, to Charles Sumlin. We always appreciate a loyal listener bringing us gifts. How about these sticks?
They're great. It's a great stick. Talking cigars. I'm a cigar aficionado, and obviously Charles has heard us talking about it. So thank you, brother, for coming out and sharing.
Another guy that likes stogies joined us yesterday. For guys that miss it, our buddy Brian Baldinger.
Yes, he does. And Baldy, we talked to him about a variety of things, including what are your thoughts on Vic Fangio being hired in Denver?
Well, I think it's a great combination. I mean, I'm a big fan of Vic Fangio. He's had the number one defense this year. He had the number one defense in San Francisco when he was there with Jim Harbaugh. He's a great coach. Did a great job this year. He doesn't overcomplicate things, yet he does a lot. And, Gary Kubiak, I mean, he won the Super Bowl with the Ravens as the offensive coordinator. He's really, really smart. He's a really good coordinator. He'll get the most out of the talent. And so I think it's a great combination in Denver. I think you've got two real, real veteran adults in the room that know how to run both sides of the ball. And I think Vic is really looking forward to this opportunity.
Brian Baldinger with us, guys, longtime NFL vet, does TV, done some Falcons preseason work over the years as well, joins us here on the WadeFord.com hotline.
Yeah, you said adults. On the flip side, how about this boy band phenomenon? You got Matt LaFleur, you got Cliff Kingsbury. I mean, is everybody just trying to replicate the young stud Sean McVay dynamic?
Yeah, I mean, this has always been a league that copied trends. And it's always been a copycat league, whether it's schemes or coaches. And so when Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan and these guys, all come out of Mike Shanahan's system, and they both have, and Sean McVay has the success he's having, They're looking for that next guy. So LaFleur, look, if Cliff Kingsbury coached both Baker Mayfield and Patrick Mahomes, and you've seen the success they have had, they're going to take a chance and see if he can replicate that with Josh Rosen. So that's where it's at. Now, it takes a whole lot more in this business to win than just coaching a quarterback. So I hope these people are, you know, going to surround these coaches with, you know, real adults and guys that have had a great deal of experience, either as offensive line coaches or coordinators or whatever, that they can help install some of this stuff and teach and protect the quarterback and all the other stuff that is necessary.
Baldy, yesterday we find out that the Falcons are bringing back Dirk Koetter as the OC, and Dan Quinn obviously letting go of three of his coordinators here. We didn't know what direction this might take our organization. But what do you make of Koetter? They hired Mike Mularkey back as well. He's going to be the tight ends coach. There's a lot of offensive mind power now in that room. And what do you think it will mean for the Falcons?
Well, I think, you know, sometimes the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. And I'm not saying Dirk Koetter is a devil, but they know Dirk. And they know Mularkey. And so, and Matt Ryan does. And so that's important that they have some level of continuity, I think. I mean, I went in a different direction with Sark, and you know, I don't think Sark was bad. I mean, you know, running backs got hurt, and I mean, there was a lot of other issues there in Atlanta last year. So, I mean, sometimes, but sometimes you're the fall guy, whatever. I mean, I think Dirk is real comfortable coming back there, and you just hope it doesn't get too comfortable. I mean, sometimes you got to have some tension. You got to have a little, you know, I thought Kyle Shanahan produced good tension in Atlanta with Matt, and I think some of those fireworks were good for that team. And so, you know, I mean, sometimes it's good to have a comfort level, but sometimes you can get too comfortable.
Here's the thing is Brian Baldinger joins us on the WadeFord.com hotline. 11 years, by the way, guys, as an offensive lineman in the NFL. We've run the zone blocking scheme. When Koetter was here, it was more of a, you know, a power game. It sounds like we're going to have some kind of version of zone blocking. But don't you have to kind of have an attitude? We really killed it in 16, but we've struggled in finding the right guys. We've really been decimated by injuries and depth on the O-line. What do you need to do a zone blocking scheme?
Well, I mean, you know, the idea that it's just zone blocking, I mean, you can't just zone block. I mean, you do a lot of play action off of that, and that's good. But zone blocking almost implies that you're not moving the line of scrimmage. Sometimes you have to move the line of scrimmage. You got to knock people off the ball. And so you can't just do one thing. Sometimes you can get too athletic with guys trying to do zone blocking, and that looks good. Except on 3rd and 17, when you got to, you know, stop Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald, you better be stout up front and be able to hold the ground and hold the pocket for Matt to be able to step up and deliver the ball. So you got to be, I mean, you got to have some sort of balance in the run game between the two. I mean, you just can't run horizontally in the zone blocking scheme and win a lot of times. I mean, you got to have some balance there and power, you know, run some power O and some double teams at the point inside zone and knock guys off the ball.
Yeah, we certainly haven't done a great job of that over the last couple of seasons. It's kind of been our Achilles heel. It's Brian Baldinger, guys, from NFL Network, Fox Sports. He does a variety of things as we get ready for this weekend's playoffs, as we talk about some of these coaching hires. You know, here are the Saints. They're sitting there waiting, and we've been very reluctant to say that anybody's going to go into New Orleans and beat them. Do you feel that way? And if so, who do you like in the NFC to do that?
Well, I mean, you got to go one at a time, right? So the Eagles are going down there, and they play Sunday afternoon, and they went there on November 18th, and they, you know, they got taken behind the woodshed, and they got whipped that day badly. I mean, 48-7. It was as bad an Eagle loss as Doug Peterson's ever had, and maybe the worst loss they've had in a long, long time. And, you know, there's people in the Eagles think that Sean Payton was running it up on them, and so they're talking about that in the Eagles locker room. And I think there's a totally different Eagles team. I mean, I think they've gotten healthy. Lane Johnson is healthy now. He had a great game against Khalil Mack. Darren Sproles is healthy. He didn't play in that game. Nick Foles, that quarterback, he's playing outstanding. I think defensively, the Eagles secondary is a lot better than it was in November. So, I mean, it's not going to be a 48-7 score. But still, I mean, the Saints are going to be heavily favored. They should be. I mean, they're good at home. And they've had 2 weeks to dissect the Eagles and look at that first game and figure out what they think they're going to do. So, I mean, you always have an advantage at home like that. But the good thing is the Eagles went to Los Angeles and won. They went to Chicago and they won here in the last month. So they've been on the road, and they've won on the road. And they played great in Chicago from just a concentration standpoint and from a standpoint of handling the atmosphere and the noise in Chicago. Mm-hmm. It'll be ramped up in New Orleans. So it's a difficult task. But I played for the Eagles back in the 90s. We went to New Orleans in that atmosphere, and we beat a Saint team that day. I mean, it can definitely happen.
Is Brian Baldinger with us, guys, longtime NFL vet, TV analyst now, who joins us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. The other game, the Cowboys, and we know they got a good defense. Can they take out Gurley and get things on Goff's shoulders? How do you see that game playing out?
Well, the defense is playing outstanding. I mean, they are a fast, young, violent defense. And they hit everything that moves, and they took the number one rushing attack in football, the Seattle Seahawks, last week, and they just crumbled it into reduced it to just pebbles. They got nothing out of the run game. One game, one run the whole day. They're really good. They're really good up front. They're good at every level. And so I think defensively they're going to be fine against the Rams. The question to your point is, I know Zeke will have some success running the ball. You know, can Dak make enough plays in the pass game? He made just enough last week to win. So, but it's really where they have struggled. Now, Amari has made a big difference, and they're a lot better with Amari in there. But can they find some explosive plays in the pass game? Because that's what it's going to take. And he has not been great at that. The Cowboys have not been great at that. But, you know, the formula is to run the ball at a team that the Rams, that is, that isn't very good at stopping the run. And we'll see if they can do that.
Baldy, the Colts are hot. And, you know, as much as I've enjoyed watching the Chiefs this season, Mike and I are both a little skeptical that Andy Reid may blow this, and the Colts are the hot team right now. What do you make of that matchup?
Well, Patrick Mahomes has not had a bad game in 16 weeks. I've seen him in the rain against Jacksonville. I've seen the Baltimore Ravens hit him 16 times in a game, and it didn't ruffle him at all. I mean, the kid is just he's unflappable is what he is. So I don't think that Andy Reid can – I don't think he can screw this up. I mean, I don't think he can. I mean, this kid is too good. And the Colts are playing great. I mean, they're playing as well as anybody out there. And their defense is really underrated. They're very good. They shut the Cowboys out. They shut 3 weeks ago. They shut Houston down last week. I mean, they're really good defense. But Patrick Mahomes just plays a fearless style of football. And I just don't see. And forget about the atmosphere. The Colts can handle all of that. Andrew Luck can handle the noise. Arrowhead, they'll have that meter, seeing how loud everybody is. I mean, Andrew Luck can handle all that. They did last week in Houston. But I think it's going to be a really good game. But I can't see Patrick Mahomes losing this weekend.
Hey, Baldy, before we cut you loose, the Chargers, man. Everything Philip Rivers has done is on the resume, except for, obviously, getting to the Super Bowl. And it's not your mom and dad's Patriots team. A little different this year. I mean, Chargers defense just looks lights out. You're going to give San Diego a puncher's chance up in New England?
Yeah, I do. I think it's going to be a good game. I know the Chargers have to be ready for something that they haven't seen on any of the 16 you know, game films of the Patriots this year. It's going to be, they're going to have a different personnel groupings. They're going to have different plays. They're going to do things differently defensively. We'll see if they decide to take out Keenan Allen or, you know, is it to stopping Melvin Gordon? I mean, they're going to try to take something away from the Chargers, and then how do the Chargers kind of counter that? So, I mean, it's going to be a real chess match between the two teams, but the Chargers on paper are a better team right now. It doesn't mean that they're going to go there and win, though.
I agree. I think they're playing really well. Their defense is stout. It's Brian Baldinger, guys. Again, watch him, NFL Network, Fox Sports. Baldy, getting back to some of these coaching hires, what do you make of Bruce Arians getting back in it and now becoming the new head coach of Tampa Bay?
Well, I saw Bruce this year, early in the season. He was doing some games with Trent Green at CBS, and I talked to him about it. And you could tell he was itching to get back. I mean, the TV was fun. It was easy for him. You know, it was interesting in a way for him because it was new. But he was jonesing to get back in week four when I saw him. I think he's a really good coach. I think he's going to put together a really good staff. You know, he had some health issues, and so they made him go take a physical, and he passed the physical. I'm not surprised. I mean, you see what Freddie Kitchen did up in Cleveland. I mean, he knows how to coach coaches, too. And so I think it's actually a pretty good fit for Tampa right now.
And then Mike McCarthy getting back in the game. So the only place he wants to be is with the Jets. I mean, he's obviously – you think he's the right guy to get Darnold and that offense rolling?
Well, he's been around a lot of good quarterbacks. You know, he started with Joe Montana. He had Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. So, he knows what a good quarterback's supposed to look like, that's for sure. So that's a pretty good starting point. I think you can question maybe the staff to a certain degree, and you could question, is the offense that he ran in Green Bay, it looked awfully stale, especially this year, but even last year, for long parts of last year, and they could never find a backup quarterback when Aaron went out. So those would be question marks I would have if I was the Jets in hiring Mike. But otherwise, he's been a very, very accomplished coach.
Baldy, what about in Cleveland? I see this play out. You know, Hugh Jackson, they get run during the season. You have Greg Williams take over. You see progress with Cleveland, and then boom. Freddie Kitchens is named the head coach. Is this more about Baker Mayfield and Kitchens' relationship, or is this just about Freddie Kitchens being ready to take over?
Well, I think it starts with Freddie Kitchens and Baker Mayfield and how literally, I mean, as soon as they got beat by Pittsburgh and they blew out Hugh and, you know, and Todd Haley made those changes, I mean, the offense looked completely different. And the offense was really effective the last seven or eight weeks. It was really effective. And so I think it starts there. I think they think that he's ready. He's a lot younger, that he can stand up in front of the room and get their attention. Greg Williams is a really good defensive coordinator. They play pretty well defensively. But I'm not surprised that they made the move. I think I mean, it is a lot about Baker, and he is a really good player. So I think you got to keep that side of the team stable. And Freddie stabilizes that, and we'll see if he can handle all the rest of the duties, which are considerable, to be the head coach.
It's always good to have you on, man. Appreciate the info, and love watching your stuff. Check him out, guys, Brian Baldinger. Baldy, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, my pleasure, guys. Take care. Enjoy the games.
Dukes of Bell, man, we're live here at Twin Peaks in Buckhead. We got our ice-cold Dukes of Bell Hayman Ale, about a half a keg left, so come on down, help us polish that bad boy off. We'll come back, some Yeah Man, No Man. And by the way, that conversation, we now know that Adam Gase is going to take the Jets' job, and now Greg Williams, according to the New York Post, offered the defensive coordinator job. Guys, you're not going to believe who's back on the market for offensive coordinator, but is it too late for the Falcons? We'll explain.
Today's question number one.
It's our man, Bo Morgan, here. We're, by the way, at Twin Peaks. Carl, sorry to cut you off. I just want to give a shout-out to the guys. Is it McKenna? McKenny's? These guys are working hard. They're drinking Coca-Colas. I don't think I'm supposed to say they're here at Twin Peaks, so I'm going to stop talking, Carl. But some working guys are going to make sure the HVAC is flowing somewhere here in Buckhead. The guy was talking to the guys. I'm like, yeah, we drink beer and... Well, not now because we're on the air, but guys bring us cigars and we look at beautiful women. We get paid to do it.
Yeah, not only did you give their company name already, which you shouldn't have probably done, but yes, we appreciate you guys coming out here and hanging out
with
us. As
I said,
man,
they work for Yablonski HVAC.
Yeah, and they are drinking Coca-Cola. Now, that part is true. A reminder, guys, the third annual Game Bowl Paper Football Championships is coming up. 929thegame.com/Game Bowl to get into the tournament. You need to do it now. It's January 26th at Stars and Strikes in Sandy Springs. Coming up, 5 o'clock, we've got the Falcon Report. And as Mike mentioned, we've got some news for about an offensive coordinator who all of a sudden has become available. It's very interesting. We'll get into that. But let's get to Yeah Man, No Man on this Friday here at Twin Peaks.
Well, we're at a restaurant, so let's do some food stuff.
Okay.
And we'll start with a 27-pound bucket of mac and cheese.
It's a lot of mac and cheese, Carl.
Costco is selling this 27-pound bucket.
It's been pre-cooked, so I mean, I just spoon it in the microwave and I just heat it up and it's good to go.
Well, funny that you should ask. I believe that is the way it will work. It's 6 gallons, which is 180 servings. It has a shelf life of 20 years.
20 now, years? How much? Wait, time out. What kind of preservatives and salt do you have in that, Carl, to make that last for 20
zombie
years?
Apocalypse can happen and you can still eat this mac and cheese.
Now, this is not cheap, all right? Because remember, while everything comes in bulk at places like Costco, the bigger the bulk, the bigger the price.
Yeah.
It's going to be a $90 price tag. But now, when you look back, it is only $2 per serving. And it is already sold out online.
Wow. That's crazy talk.
I ask you, yeah, man, nah, man.
If I had the space.
Macaroni and cheese in bulk.
If I had the space, Carl, hell yeah. I ain't got the space for it, man. I got the walk-in fridge like you do.
6 pounds, you said? 6 pounds of mac and cheese?
6 gallons.
27 pounds, oh, which is 6 gallons.
Okay, so first of all, let me just say this about Costco. It's a love-hate relationship, okay? I love Costco, but I hate it because anytime I go in there, I'm guaranteed to walk out with way more blank than I need, and I've spent triple the amount that I went in to spend.
But you know when you're at like your whatever your favorite store is, you could be anywhere, Carl. They always put those impulse buys by the register. Same thing at Costco. It's like, you know, I wasn't really planning on a gallon drum of mayonnaise, but I guess I'll take it. Yeah. But I mean, 6 gallons of mac and cheese, again, as long as you've got a place to store it, why not?
So I'm going to say, because I love Costco, seriously, it is a love-hate relationship. And if you're listening, you guys know what I'm talking about. You can never go into Costco and get one thing. No. Matter of fact, try it. Just go in and say, I'm going to get toilet paper.
Oh, look.
Good luck.
Two dozen pork chops are on special.
That's right. That's what happens. So I'm going to say, yeah, man, because I know I would probably do it. Plus, I love mac and cheese. And the shelf life is how long?
20 years.
Yes.
So you... I get to it eventually.
You can outlive the zombie apocalypse and perhaps Keith Richards. So, yeah, we're both yeah men on that one, buddy.
I just would love to walk in one of y'all's pantries and find a bucket of macaroni and cheese. I'd be like, well, they've got a new house guest.
Jeez Louise.
All right, we're going to keep it in the food department, being in, you know, a bar, restaurant kind of place. Doritos is back with a new Dorito, and it is a flaming hot Dorito. They basically took the bright red powder from Cheetos, they blasted it into Doritos, made it hot, and now they're on sale pretty much everywhere you can get it today. So yeah, man, no
is it
man.
Like a ghost pepper Dorito? What are we talking about?
Yeah. How hot are we talking about?
What's the heat mean?
Do we know?
They do not specify, but okay. They are called flaming hot.
So the hottest ever Dorito, obviously, then.
Yeah.
Yes.
Listen, they always taste good going down. Coming out, that's another story. But listen.
Whoa, why you got to go there with that?
I'm just saying. You're talking about hotness.
Hey, my brother, two words, tux pads. And don't be afraid to use them.
All right, what's the question you're saying? Yeah?
So, yeah, man, no, man, on the new Flaming Hot Doritos.
Oh, yeah, man. You can't have enough heat on a Dorito, Joe.
Flaming Hot?
Oh, yeah. You know me, man.
Flaming?
Love that stuff. Love that heat. And plus, it's a great way to lose 10 pounds the hard way.
Okay. Yeah, I like spicy foods, too. So I'm going to say yeah. I'm going to say yeah, man.
Again, you guys are doing nothing for me for wanting to eat them with your...
Well, again, the way
and you're probably not doing much with people eating here.
Well, I apologize for the reference, again, but I just want to be honest with you.
I was going to say, when I started out in radio, I did have a boss who told me, let's try to limit this talk about excretory functions when you're in a restaurant bar. Back to you there, Bo.
Well, I just did a little producing on air there for you guys. All right, we're gonna change it. And this is something probably good for you guys. I'm not really sure if you guys actually start your New Year's resolutions. But a psychology professor in Texas says that you should actually start your New Year's resolution on March 4th.
Ooh.
And his reasoning is the first 8 weeks of 2019, you should just try to figure out what you want to change, but more importantly, how you want to change this.
It takes 8 weeks.
This. So you slowly incorporate the small changes and then find out, helps find you what motivates you the best to reach these goals. So I say, yeah, man, no, man, is this going to be a new fad where people will start it later than
well,
New
not
Year's
really
Day?
It's not a New Year's resolution. It's just spring cleaning for your body, I guess, if you're going to go for weight loss.
All right, first of all, does this guy know how big I would already be if I wait another 8 weeks? Listen, the goal is to get started and immediately start trying to change your habits, whatever your goal is for the new year. If you wait 8 weeks, what are you waiting 8 weeks for? To write in a notepad to tell yourself, I am thinking about changing the way I think about what? Start.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Remember, how many years have I tried to give up booze for Lent and it lasts like 6 hours or 6 days or 6 minutes? I mean, because you throw St. Patrick's Day in there and March Madness. I think this doctor's full of crap. No, man. Nothing good. You got to make that resolution and start that sucker on January 1.
I don't think waiting 8 weeks is the solution. It's a nice thought process. No, man.
He's from Texas, so there's a good chance. And by the way, if you can't quit something cold turkey, you probably have an issue and you probably need to seek real help.
Yeah. I quit smoking cold turkey. I've been fat ever since.
Yeah, he's right about that.
Maybe you should quit.
It is Dukes and Bell. We are live at Twin Peaks.
Now, for you kids at home, never, ever smoke. But I mean, if you do smoke, though, I mean, once you stop, you get fat.
Gain weight.
It happens.
Yeah, that's where my dad went back to smoking.
Right.
All right. What happened?
We're a healthy show, aren't we?
What happened in Denver? And all of a sudden, is there buyer's remorse? We will explain next.